Hey all, welcome to the Book Spider Podcast. My name is Chris Malmberg, and I'm joined by my co-hosts Patrick Barney and Hans Berger. We read and talk about books. Sometimes music, sometimes movies, always taking ourselves way too fucking seriously. For this episode, we're discussing Samantha Harvey's recent Booker Prize-winning novel, Orbital. Orbital follows six astronauts representing various nations on the International Space Station over the course of 24 hours. Dramatically, not very much happens. This isn't a story about interpersonal conflicts. It is, very explicitly, one long chain of the astronauts' reflections on the nature of life, death, borders, humanity, and a relationship to the world. I would say it's practically a prose poem that intermittently circles, leaves, and returns to a few major and minor themes. Climate change, as exemplified by a major hurricane striking the Philippines, the death of one astronaut's mother, and some other shit. I'm going to be honest, I found this to be very beautiful, but also extraordinarily boring. And ultimately...
That is exactly how I felt too, yeah, yeah. I think that's kind of its reputation, but...
And ultimately, yes, I wish the book was more than just beautifully written internality. Maybe we can unpack that together if we end up disagreeing at all. So something occurred to me while I was reading this. We talked about competency porn in previous podcasts. It struck me that, like, if you write just a lot of very eloquent sentences about a character's reflections on, you know, whatever, their lives, their relationships to other people, their relationship to the world. And it's all very eloquent, but in the end, if it doesn't do enough, is that something like thoughtful reflection porn? Could we say that that is something? Is that more elevated, though, than, you know, when we talk about competency porn and competency porn being like, who's the Hunt for Red October guy?
Tom Clancy.
Tom Clancy, yeah. Or ER, you know, shows too that just sort of like zoom in on people doing their jobs very well. And they use terminology that is, you know, precise to their field. And there's something about that. Tom Clancy will describe exactly how a gun works. Is it unfair of me to think of Harvey's Orbital, which I'm starting off from a place of being a little bit brutal. Ultimately, I found this to be very beautifully written, and I'm glad it exists. But if I can't take much away from it, is that thoughtful reflection porn?
The term porn is interesting here to me, right? In general, is, you know, we talk about food porn, competency porn. Is the idea of what makes it metaphorically pornographic, the idea here is that in sex porn, you might call it, every extraneous element other than sex has been reduced or minimized. In competency porn, every extraneous element other than the enjoyment of competency has been reduced or minimized. So here, every extraneous element other than reflection and internal monologuing has been reduced or eliminated. That is why we are metaphorically comparing it to porn.
Sure. I think that, like, there's no dramatic arc at all. There's no interpersonal conflict. There's not even, I would say, very toothsome sort of explorations of, you know, some of the topics that come up. Obviously, climate change is a very present thing in this novel, but it doesn't really say anything that I could find, that I encountered. It doesn't really, I'm going to, you know, maybe veer in Patrick's direction here. A book like this maybe should say more if it's going to avoid being something that feels very pleasant, very thoughtful, and then ultimately empty calories. And that, you know, that sort of, it's a good way of putting it, Hans. There's not very much other than beautifully written, beautifully realized reflection. And maybe that's pornographic.
Well, I guess the other version you can think of, you know, like porn represents kind of an idealized version of sexuality, right? Where desire is infinite and gratification is infinite, right? And nothing gets in the way of desire and gratification. Most real world concerns don't intrude. So there's kind of like a fantasy version of the limited gratification we experience in real life. And competency porn, I guess if you want to think about the connection in a different way, right? Like competency porn is kind of like the exciting, there's something exciting about seeing human competency extended to unreal ways that kind of don't experience the barriers to true competency that most people have in real life. So maybe alternately, if you want to think of this as kind of a fantasy version of human perception where reflection is drastically heightened, right? But in a way, all fiction is a fantasy version of human perception where the capacity to reflect and think and observe are heightened beyond, I think in most cases, a truly kind of photorealistic reflection of human cognition. So from a certain standpoint, you could argue that all fiction is in some way reflection porn. This fiction is one-dimensional in that the other things that make fiction compelling have been removed, but I don't necessarily think that the level and quality of reflection here, I'm not convinced that it has to exist in an otherwise plotless, tensionless novel to have the quality that it does.
It's one-dimensional as a way of sort of distilling something that is beautiful. You would say that it could be as beautiful, but still have more dimension.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, in some ways, this is kind of, I guess, in a weird way, I know that I always come back to this example, but I remember when we were talking about Omen Setter's Luck by William Gass, right? We said that in some ways it was like a prose poem about one person's subjectivity disguised as a novel, right? And this is kind of a prose poem about subjectivity disguised as a novel. But it just is not, I don't know, like the level of truly flashy writing and thinking that you would need to exercise to make that satisfying, to me, doesn't really feel like it's been reached here, right? The level of reflection contained in this novel could occur in a novel that was three times longer, but there was also plot and tension. I think personally, I don't know, like it, there were very interesting sentences and lines, but I don't think that it's so brilliantly written as a standalone piece of reflection, subjectivity, prose poeming that it couldn't have had other, you know, plot elements added to it.
I think I agree with that, Hans, that this is definitely something I thought about. How, so there's no plot, there's no tension, there is some biographical information about these characters that we get, like her name is Chia, the Japanese astronaut, her mother has died, you know, but there's not a lot to, like, a lot of the meat and potatoes, so to speak, of fiction, you know, where we get a lot of character backstory and a lot of plot and background. So if you don't have something, if you don't have those things, then the prose needs to be really good and the reflections need to be really good. And I'm not saying that the prose isn't good or that the reflections aren't good. You know, the section where Harvey thinks about the artist, is that a Van Eyck painting that she's talking about, where there's the artist,
oh, yeah,
is painting
Las Meninas?
Painting himself in a mirror as he paints the king and queen.
Velasquez, I think.
Velasquez. Okay. I feel like Van Eyck did something similar. But either way, you know, I thought that was cool. Like, that was a very cool idea, a very cool, like, thing to think about. I will say that it could, you know, that particular anecdote or section of reflection could actually be in any piece of fiction, because it's always going to resonate with a work of fiction, because, you know, the question that it asks is, you know, is the artist working on something real, or is it only a reflection of what the artist thinks, blah, 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 you know, that kind of thing. So there are some cool things. There are some cool things in the novel. I don't know if the writing is like so stunning that it's able to sustain itself, even as, you know, even though this is super short, like, you know, it's for being very similar to a lyric essay or a prose poem, whatever you want to call it, it's not lyric enough, if that makes sense. Also, you know, like, the balance seems super off. So, you know, if I'm going to talk about a writer whose work I enjoy on the line level probably the most, is someone like Cormac McCarthy, where to me the poetry and the mythic poetry of his lines are, when he's doing it right, there, it's kind of just, it just boggles my mind how good I think it is. Like, when I read something that I'm just astounded by how well I think he does it sometimes. And there are novels where he's written where he doesn't have too much of that kind of mythic quality. So, like, All the Pretty Horses is much more minimalistic in that sense than some of his other novels. And then there are some novels where he doesn't quite get it right. He doesn't quite have it under control, and maybe that's something like Outer Dark. But then in a novel like The Road or Blood Meridian, I think that he's kind of gotten that balance between just your normal prose that your reader needs to understand what's happening, and the mythical prose that is just jaw-droppingly good. I think he gets that right in those novels. This book is attempting to. This book is attempting to write in the more like jaw-droppingly, mind-bogglingly good lyric prose mode, but it neither has enough of the other stuff that you want out of a novel, nor is it good enough to really. Like, I know this is a long way of just saying I agree with Hans, but, you know, hopefully that describes what I'm trying to get at.
Well, and I'll come in. I'll say, like, Harvey didn't give herself the Booker Prize. I think this is I'm glad that this book exists, you know, because it's thoughtful and you know, she took the time to write it in a very, and clearly, like, it's resonated with people. I think that, you know, similarly to when we were talking about House of Leaves, and Hans, you mentioned sort of the pleasure of taking, you know, something down to the peg on which it truly belongs. I think that this won the Booker Prize, and I'll say, I found the line level writing to be quite good. I found it to be lyrical and quite good. I actually found the ideas to be a little bit mushy, you know, a little bit, you know, I don't necessarily want didactic political statements, but I do think that, like, there's a way in which the many ideas in this novel are not, I think, given enough time to amount to more than cursory surveys of ideas that have been handled better by other writers. And, you know, I think that, you know, there's maybe an opportunity, maybe, like, maybe there's more, you know, to get to if, you know, given more time, maybe you don't get there. You know, that's, you know, sometimes you start writing something and you think that there's something down that path and there isn't, or it's not worth the journey. So I don't know that there is something more in the synthesis of these ideas, but I didn't find that. I don't know. You know, I guess I'm kind of agreeing, disagreeing. I found the lyricism to be there. I thought the ideas were clever and interesting, but in a way that felt like they were being explored for how clever and interesting they were rather than how much they mattered. And that actually feels a little bit antithetical to, like, the point of the novel, which is, like, everything within the frame of the window from the ISS facing the Earth, everything in that frame matters so much because it's literally everything. But then in sort of, like, meandering through these astronauts' various concerns, and Patrick, you said Harvey, like, reflected. I think that's appropriate. I didn't really, like, draw very meaningful distinctions between these characters. I think
it was, like, super
ultimately it's Harvey.
Yeah
it's Harvey.
Yeah
So I just didn't really, I would have wanted there to be something that I wasn't expecting, and I kind of got everything that I was expecting, you know, like, idea wise
I do think it's interesting that it's resonated, and I don't mind that it has resonated and got a little bit of an audience. You know, I mean, it does seem like it's almost kind of become canonically regarded as overrated now. You know, like, every
wow, what a quick, that's so fast, what a turnaround.
There was a, like, when it first came out, there was a brief period where, like, I saw it in bookstores a lot, and I saw it talked about in the New Yorker, and I vaguely heard about it winning a prize, and then I didn't really hear about it for a bit, and then there was a burst of, like I would see references to it being, like, the canonical, like, serious, boring novel that, like, you had to pretend to like in essays on Substack, or, like, I went to a book club. I went to a book club at the local bookstore, and there were several people who made passing references to, at least it wasn't boring, like Orbital. So, yeah, I don't know. It's become canonically regarded as overrated and dull, and that might be too bad, right? I mean, I do think it's an interesting quirk. It is, in a sense, an experimental novel, right? It's a very comforting, soothing, pleasant experimental novel, but it is in some sense an experimental novel. And if it had been, I think if it had been, you know, like if somebody we knew published this on a small press, we would think they were an unsung genius, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Harvey's
written a beautiful, beautiful book.
And it's not just that she's written a beautiful book. It's that she's written a book that defies the standard expectations for what makes fiction gratifying and has achieved both much more commercial success than almost any literary fiction and also a certain amount of conventional critical regard. And it is gratifying to me to see something that is so contrary to standard expectation succeeding in that manner, right? Even if I don't particularly feel any desire to ever pick it up again. And there are, like, even within the kind of boundaries of, you know, Chris, like you mentioned, the sort of the trope of from space there's no borders being a little bit cliche. And I suppose, like, they do sort of, she does kind of come back around to that and dissect that in a way, right? But, like, what I was thinking of was there's, like, a section near the end about, like, well, you know, if the beginning of the year is the Big Bang, then, you know, humans arise on December. And there's, like, almost exactly that same thing in Carl Sagan's Cosmos in, like, 1988, you know? Like,
right. I thought that was kind of dumb.
Yeah. It and I don't know,
that
I guess
cliche.
Like, if, and maybe if you've never encountered the cliche, I mean, I think there are certain types of middlebrow art that connect with people who don't know the cliche, right? Because they happen to be able to find an audience of people that don't know the cliche. And I wonder if that's part of the success of this, but again, like, there's a certain respectable achievement to taking something this kind of, like, to getting the level of success and respect that she has with something this dramatically inert.
Yeah, I didn't include this in the questions, but it was on my mind, and then I wrote it into my copy of questions that I have right now, because it occurred to me that, like, another sort of experimentally constructed novel written in a poetic style with not too much of an arc, really, not too much interpersonal conflict, really, is No One Is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood. And that's one of my favorite books of, like, maybe ever, but of certainly of the last few years. Like, I think I think the world of that book. And it just occurred to me as kind of it's not entirely fair, because the International Space Station is just a very antiseptic environment for a story. Like, these are incredibly stoic, like, professional people who, you know, even if they come from different countries, they all get along. There's just not too much to write about there, even though they're in an extraordinary position. But it just occurred to me to wonder, why is it that No One Is Talking About This is one of my favorite books, and then I felt so disappointed by this one, given that they both have, you know, a kind of an experimentation with, like, lyric, you know, kind of like allowing lyricism to sort of take the front, not really having quite a lot of interpersonal conflict. No One Is Talking About This as far more of an arc. Maybe that is the big distinction. But, you know, it occurred to me that, like, this format, or these types of experimentations aren't the reason why I don't like this book, you know, as much as some people. I don't know if there's a question there, but does that make sense, like, as a comparison? It might be an unfair comparison. You guys can shoot me down.
No One Is Talking About This, I think it understands that it is defying expectation by being dramatically inert, and when the baby is introduced halfway through, suddenly it becomes incredibly dramatic, right? And there's that kind of, like, shift from sort of, like, this petty world of meaningless online drama to this, like, truly meaningful emotional experience is both it's both thematically resonant and also structurally creative and surprising, right? And most people that I've talked to that read that book, I think including the two of you, if I remember right, around the
halfway
point.
Hated the first half.
No, not hated the first half at all. Enjoyed the first half on the level of a very funny series of lyric fragments, and started to think, like, is anything going to happen? And maybe felt like their patience was tested a little bit beyond the breaking point, but then all of a sudden so much happens, right? And So I think like it's the that novel is totally aware of the play of expectation, and there's a feeling when a thing does finally happen of something that was like like a rubber band that was stretched all the way to tautness springing back at you, right? It would be like if Orbital was Orbital for its first half, or even if like the book that we have was the first half of a book, and then, you know what I thought was going to happen, actually? And this is sort of the answer to another of your questions, so I don't want to spoil it here, but, or, well, I don't want to ruin the questions.
Yeah,
but like,
go ahead and jump into it.
Well, you asked about like how you inject drama into a setting like this, and like what, you know, what version of this would I make if I wanted to make a more dramatically interesting thing? And there's two answers to that that I came up with, one of which connects to what I was saying just now, which is there's the whole kind of background plot about the flight to the moon, right? Right. And what I was expecting was that the flight to the moon, something catastrophic would happen and all the moon astronauts would die, right? And that would change the tone and make them reflect in a different way or introduce a level of tension. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be like, and I don't even think there would be, there's like a version of that where somehow they have to save the moon astronauts, right? That would be the film version. But there's also a version where it just completely changes how they think about where they are. And that would be, that was what I was hoping for. I was hoping that the moon astronauts were going to somehow change the tenor of it in a much darker way. And there's a version of this that's like Orbital as it exists is the first half of a novel. Then the moon astronauts die terribly and catastrophically. And then the second half is kind of a dark inverse with a very different set of reflections. And that's, if I were going to do a more dramatic version of this, that's what I would be interested in. And that's something that would structurally be more comparable to what happens in No One Is Talking About This. The other thing I was thinking about, there was a movie that came out, I think, last year about, it's like, you know, some astronauts aboard the ISS and they all get along and they're having a great time. And then there's a nuclear war on Earth. And all of a sudden... Mm. You know, the when you have a nuclear war between Russia and the West, suddenly having a bunch of Russian and Western astronauts combined, you know, crammed together in the ISS becomes a very different thing, right? And I thought it was a just fucking brilliant premise for a movie. The reviews were very bad, and I never watched it. Like I from my sense of it is that it's generally the perspective is that the premise was biffed, right? But like, I thought it was a pretty dynamite premise. But obviously that's worlds away from this novel in every regard other than setting.
Patrick, how would you have, I mean, like, I think that this is, there's a lot of promise for not necessarily injecting tension and conflict into the novel and maybe just being a little bit more aggressive with some of the ideas, but I, you know, I'll leave it to you. Like, how would you have written this novel? But what is the Patrick Barney?
This is actually super. This is a super interesting question because, obviously the plot is totally different, but this novel made me feel so weird. Because it reminded me so much of Misfit the Wanderer, the novella I published years ago through the indie press that I started way back in the day. And obviously the plot's different, but the obsession with like omniscience and like the greater perspective around the Earth and like all these different things happening at different times was very similar, I would say. And so to answer your question, I would have written the lyricism and the reflection fell flat to me because they were what Hans said, too heartwarming or too makes you feel too good. It's too it's a little too optimistic for me was one reason that I felt the lyricism was lacking. And I would have much preferred a more, and I'm going to say more realistic, because I do think it would be more realistic to kind of to be more honest about humanity and like the horrors that we're capable of. And that's something that I did in Misfit the Wanderer that I think, I don't want to say Misfit the Wanderer is better than this. I actually regret publishing it and don't think that it's that good, but I do think that the darker, more pessimistic omniscience in Misfit is more interesting than the more aspirational, more optimistic lyricism of this. And I say all this like wanting to let you know that I think Misfit kind of blows now after years of kind of having that after years of hindsight. But yeah, like reading this made me feel really weird because it reminded me so much of what I was trying to do with that novella, and you know, knowing that this became a great success and mine got rejected by all the publishers, so I had to publish it myself because I'm a loser. You know, and I don't know. But yeah, I would definitely, I like the idea. I like the idea of like taking a huge perspective on the human race, like kind of encapsulated by that photograph metaphor of Michael Collins taking a picture of everyone in the earth but himself. So I like that huge perspective and I wish it were more freaking honest, man. Like, if we're going to take a huge look at humanity, you know, what about the millennia of genocide and, you know, rape and slavery? Like, you got to be honest about that shit. You can't just, you know, oh, you know, it's all hunky-dory. Like, yeah, there's some climate change. There's some problems here and there, blah, blah, blah. But let's be optimistic and hopeful. No.
So just in the last week or two, Elon Musk and Trump.
Fuck Nazis.
Fuck
Nazis.
What's just, that?
I said fuck Nazis.
Yeah, fuck Nazis. But basically,
Elon Musk and Trump.
The head of SpaceX and the president of the United States, the richest person in the world and arguably the most politically powerful person in the world, got into a fight. And one of the things that I don't even know where it is on the table, whether it's on the table or not. One of the gambling chips that was sort of moving around was, you know, being able to supply the International Space Station or even guide it out of orbit when it's, you know, sort of scheduled to come out of orbit. And it occurred to me that like there's an incredible, you mentioned, Patrick, the extraordinary optimism of this novel. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a fair sort of window for that, you know, being that, you know, I've read Scott Kelly's memoir about sort of preparing for and then spending so much time on the International Space Station. The astronauts up there are like bureaucrats, longtime bureaucrats in Washington. Like one political party goes into power, one political party goes out of power. Like mostly like these are people who are like professionals and not the most, you know, sort of they're not really up there because of their imagination or their artistic ability or anything like that. They're up there to do jobs and And I think that like there is maybe a kind of a you know, not quite in the way that she captured it, but maybe there's a window from that into sort of like a kind of like an optimistic view of the world, because like up there, everyone gets along. But, you know, also sort of talking about Patricia Lockwood, one of the things that, you know, sort of has a very strong presence in Patricia Lockwood's novel is, I think she calls him does she call Trump the tyrant or
the dictator?
The dictator. That's right. So there's an incredible oppressive presence of like contemporary dysfunction in that novel that makes it feel of a time. And I felt reading Orbital, like it was almost like I felt it almost sort of turning on itself, like not in a way that it intended, where I felt like I was reading about a very old idea of space and, you know, the relationship between nations and humanity in space and like our, you know, ascendancy, our scientific technological ascendancy, our progression as a species, you know, ultimately in a very optimistic frame. And it felt to me like this book was paying attention to something, maybe it never existed, but it definitely doesn't feel like it exists now. You know, it doesn't feel like this, the kind of optimism that frames, you know, humanity in space in Orbital is necessarily going to be around in 10 years. Like, you know, are we going to be having multinational collaboration in research, you know, in space, or is it all going to be corporations? Are we going to get to Mars, or are we, you know, is that going to happen? Are we going to retreat from this frontier, or are we going to, is the frontier going to be entirely owned by private interests? It feels like that this operates in a very strange point that feels kind of imaginary to me if it ever existed. And I wonder, like, you know, 20 years from now, Hans, you mentioned this book was immediately considered overrated. Is this book actually interesting again because it captures an old idea of humanity's relationship to space?
I wonder if maybe that's some of what made it appealing now, right? Is it, I think you're totally right that there's something about the idea of being in space here that does feel more like something that would have been in the culture in like 1990, you know? And mm-hmm. I wonder if part of what made it appealing was being sort of briefly able to remember and recapture that idea of a more optimistic and romanticized sense of space travel mixed with enough climate change guilt that you feel like you're eating your broccoli too, right?
That makes sense. That makes sense. I think, you know, maybe it's too simple, but I do think that this book is an incredibly pleasant experience while being thoughtful and beautiful. And, you know, maybe you hit that sweet spot and you win the Booker Prize and sell, you know, millions of copies or whatever. You know, that's maybe you don't have to excel in any one of those areas. You just have to kind of be right in the sort of Venn diagram overlap point between all of them. But I'm with Patrick. I wish that this had... I think that if it was more present with now, like, you know, with the... Again, since we're on the International Space Station, where is the kind of like... And maybe it's in there, maybe I missed it, but the corporate, you know, relationship, the private space space shipping relationship to this soon to be, you know, and she handles it very, you know, poetically, but soon to be decommissioned venture. Like this is a, you know, a non-private multinational venture that is increasingly only, you know, only able to exist and be supplied because of private interest. And when it goes down, I don't know. I think the odds are pretty strongly against any kind of replacement that would be emerging from purely from, you know, a kind of national or multinational non-private interest. I just don't know where that comes from. So, you know, as we're talking about it, I find myself maybe liking the book a little less because it feels like it's just not of our time, given like what it's about.
Reading this novel made me think about another book that they'd kind of been twinned in my head for a while, right? This book and another book, which is the other book being In Ascension by Martin McInnes, which is another novel about space travel from around 2023 to 2024, written by a person who lives in the UK. But they're kind of opposites in almost every way. In particular, Chris, like your point about the corporatism, the increased corporatism and privatization of space travel, among other things, it is very much about that. So it might actually, I think, speak to the moment in a more direct way. I don't know if either of you are familiar with this novel, have heard much about it, know much about it.
I definitely heard about it. Perhaps? It's on my list.
In Ascension? Yeah.
I've never heard of it.
Okay. Well, it's kind of like it's another literary novel about space travel from the mid-2020s from the British Isles that is, I would say, if you were to make a list of every quality that Orbital has as a work and invert that, you would have In Ascension. So,
a tense,
so the astronauts are all madly
fuck-driven.
Orgies in space.
Tense, deeply plot-driven, long. Okay. I guess it also has a lot of reflection, to be fair. But long, tense, deeply plot-driven, probably pessimistic, although that's a question for the next pod. Certainly much less optimistic than this, and based much more on the idea of space travel filtered through a lot of the anxieties and concerns that, you know, Chris talked about, this kind of dodging.
Okay. That Chris talked about or I talked about?
Well, both of you.
Oh, all right. Either way.
Well, you've heard it here, folks. I think that Orbital, even though we were pretty hard on it, is a very pleasant, short experience. And like I said, I think we were hard on it because
it
won the Booker Prize. I don't think it sucked. I did in the end sort of come down kind of hard on it because I think that you can't, I don't know that it's entirely very fair or substantive or interesting to occupy that vantage point and use that vantage point to reflect on who we are and not explore some of the things that she doesn't explore. But it is a very pleasant, very beautifully written and short novel. And, you know, I think that most people who read it are going to, and not people who are reading it and looking for something that isn't there, might have a hard time with it. But I think that if you're just sort of meeting it where it is, I think you will enjoy it. So, you know, I don't want to rag on it too much. It's an enjoyable novel. But next episode, we're going to talk about In Ascension by Martin McInnes. And thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right. Peace out.